This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
Essentially, it's not about you. It's about the customer. If you serve the customer and give them what they want, which is a good product at a fair price, you will be rewarded.
What was challenging at first is when you're in the growth phase, when you're starting off that first year, you really don't have enough data to sort of compute what your real selling cost is. Am I going to move this inventory that I just bought in a year? I think it really took about 2 solid years to kind of get a rough idea of what my numbers were. The main expense is inventory, obviously. The other main expense is the selling cost. So I like to really keep those two in focus. And I know I have a number based on I have to buy this much inventory every month or every quarter to sustain this monthly cash flow. So I know that if I wanted to stop this growth level right now, I have a number in mind that every month I need to spend this much on inventory.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Griff. And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 127. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Griff. Good to be back after a week off for me.
Yeah. If people haven't figured it out yet, we stagger weeks. So it's every other week, it's either you or Rebecca.
Yes.
And I love both of you.
Well, I hope so. But I think I'm going to up my game to make sure that our listeners really, really like me over Rebecca. And she knows I'm kidding.
Why aim so low? You should get them to like you more than they like me.
Oh, that would almost be impossible.
No, I think it actually would be really easy, Brian.
No, you've got years of experience doing this. I'm still like a neophyte.
Yeah, me too. Nice weather we're having.
Well, you know, you say that, and I was thinking about that because I'm looking outside and it's all blue sky, but I know there are other parts of this country and where our listeners are that it's brutal.
We're going to talk about that in a minute, I think.
It impacts shipping sometimes.
It does. It impacts shipping. So we have some news for our sellers in the Northeast in a minute. You'll hear that. It's actually from last week, but I think it still bears repeating. And we also have some news about, eBay, the business.
That's good.
Yeah.
So as you're kind of hinting at it, what's on the program for this week?
Well, this week we have two sellers. First, we'll talk to Tim Chapman. He's an old friend of ours from the eBay radio days. He's known as Mr. Customer Service. And we're going to talk about, guess.
Customer service.
Correct. Specifically, how to plan our customer service's best practices in order to address worst-case scenarios long before they happen. And then we're going to meet a seller from Florida who actually approached us and said, hey, he'd be interested in being on the podcast. His name is Alec Larson, and he runs an auto parts business in Florida. And we'll learn how he started his business, and specifically this week, how he manages and tracks his business inventory and sales. All this and more. First up, let's find out what's in the eBay news this week, Brian.
We have two news items this week. First, eBay is extending seller protections to sellers impacted by extreme weather conditions in the Northeast.
Yeah, it was blizzard time last week in New England. Brought back memories.
Feet and feet of snow. Not just New England, but the entire Northeast U.S. If you're located in the impacted areas in the Northeast and are not able to ship your inventory, we recommend you communicate with your buyers to advise them of the situation and extend your handling time on your listings if you expect delays.
Always a good practice.
It is. And if your business is impacted, eBay will automatically protect your seller performance, including your late shipment rate, your valid tracking upload rate, item not received cases due to late delivery, as long as you've uploaded tracking and have a physical scan from the carrier before your case was opened.
Yeah, that's good. And there's more on the seller news board, so you can read the entire post there. What else is in the news, Brian?
Well, last week, eBay announced another strong business quarter for the last 3 months of 2020, with 18% GMV, or that's gross merchandise value, growth, and unprecedented traffic levels. Growth exceeded all expectations in every area, including active buyers, new sellers, traffic, conversions, and sales. In fact, eBay recorded its biggest Cyber 5 in the United States, with 1 out of every 10 U.S. shoppers flooding the site seeking hard-to-find and sold-out items. Refurbished gifts emerged as top trend, with many products selling out completely. Jordan Sweetnam, eBay's Senior Vice President and General Manager of Marketplace Americas, added, "Thank you for the incredible effort you put into your eBay businesses. The amazing variety you offered, unparalleled quality you supplied, and exceptional service you delivered made all the difference." Our sellers are great, aren't they?
They are. And what a great way to start 2021. Let's keep that momentum going.
Absolutely.
So lots to talk about in the next year that we're now into. stay tuned to the podcast. There's a lot of new features that'll be announced. I know that Harry Temkin's going to be on soon, maybe even next week.
I always like listening to Harry. I learn new stuff all the time. And it's not just about products that have been rolled out, but it's insights into some things that have been out for like a year. There'll be some other nugget of information I pick up.
Yeah. And they're doing a back-end change of the platform that's used for reporting. So it's a brand new platform, and this will allow the team under Harry to build out an incredibly robust set of reports for eBay sellers to use for their business. The request has been out there for a long time. We love the reports. We wish we had more data. We wish they went back longer. We really need, and all of that's coming. So it's going to be an exciting year, even if you just look at stuff like in Seller Hub.
That's fantastic. Our sellers are always asking for more info about their business.
Yeah, and I'm dying to see the new listing flow. I know that I'm supposed to be in it soon, Brian. You asked for my user ID so I could be added to the pool, so to speak. And I'm dying to see that. I like to try these things out as soon as I can.
Hopefully you'll be added. They're being very restrictive on who they're adding right now, but I'm sure you'll get in.
I don't like to pull rank, but I have been here for a while, so.
Exactly. So, anything else?
No, that's it. I think it's time to start the show.
So, I'll be back in a little bit to help with You Got Questions.
Great. Thanks, Brian. In the meantime, we're going to meet with Tim Chapman. February is Renew Month, and one of the aspects of running a business that we should all renew every year is our commitment to providing the best possible customer service we can. Our guest today is somewhat familiar with the topic. In fact, he's known by his eBay user ID, Mr. Customer Service. Tim Chapman, welcome to the podcast, Tim.
Thank you for having me, Griff.
I don't think we've spoken since eBay radio days.
I almost said Griffin Lee right there. I'm sorry.
I'm sure she'd appreciate that. We'll have to get her to listen. I'll leave that in. Remind us how long you've been selling on eBay, Tim.
I've been selling since June of 2001, coming up on 20 years.
Wow.
So pretty good.
Your user ID is Mr. Customer Service. Why that user ID?
First of all, well, as you know, on the early days, we got the good user IDs. But mostly, it's so that people can remember me. I want my buyers to remember your name. Because, I mean, there's millions of sellers out there. And they buy something. Well, they have to go look it up. Or say, oh, I know that guy, Mr. Customer Service. It's easy to remember. And in a word, it tells what I'm all about. I'm about customer service.
Yeah.
That's me.
So I know you said the early days you could get those good user IDs. It's still possible, but you might have to get really creative. And I think that's our first tip. You led us right into it. I wasn't thinking about this, but if you've got a user ID that's a combination of letters and numbers, you might want to consider getting something a little bit more memorable.
Yeah, it's hard to type and it's hard to remember and it's obscure type of thing. But the early days, there were some good ones out there. So I got this one and I have a number 2 at the end and a TOO at the end. So I have my other names as well.
And in case you need them. But you specialize selling on Mr. Dot Customer Service.
That's correct. Yeah. MR Dot Customer Service. And you can just Google, you know, this name if you're out there. You can just Google the name. It'll jump you right to the eBay store.
And I'll put a link to your eBay store in the transcript for those people who are interested. And they should be because, well, you're kind of an expert on this. You specialize in it. It's a passion. What are the more common customer service mistakes you've seen on eBay? Ones that sellers make quite frequently.
Yeah, Griff, on this one, I think you're going for specifics. But if it's okay, I'm going to go for a little bit of an umbrella point of view on this
one. Sure. Yes, please.
So essentially, it's not about you. It's about the customer. If you serve the customer and give them what they want, which is a good product at a fair price, you will be rewarded. And it reminds me of a famous quote by Zig Ziglar. I'm big on these quotes and stuff. And he was one of the best salesmen of all time. And the quote goes like this. You can have everything in life you want if you will just help enough other people get what they want. And it goes with eBay. It's sell a lot of stuff. You're going to make a lot of money. Serve the customer. And that's what it's about.
We didn't want to get right into specifics, but there's been an incident or a situation for the last few months that's put a lot of sellers on edge. And it is, well, they're carrier delays. You know, lots of sellers and by extension, their buyers have been impacted by these carrier delays that mostly USPS experienced during the last months of this year and even through last month of January. Were you one of those sellers, by the way?
Absolutely. I had several items go lost. In the early days, USPS, we could rely on them. Absolutely. If it's going to be there in 2 or 3 days, it's going to be there in 2 or 3 days. But what happens COVID came and they've become totally overwhelmed. And they're not doing this on purpose. They're doing the best they can.
Of course.
But I've had several items go lost. And fortunate enough, a few of the buyers have, hey, this thing finally came after 2.5 weeks. And they'll send me the refund I sent them. They'll reverse it and get it back to me. But on the priority mail packages, you can make a claim. And if it arrives, it arrives, you know, type of thing. But yeah, we just do what we can. So I definitely have been hit with that one.
Did you file any claims, by the way?
Yeah, I filed, I think, 3 or 4 priority mail claims because it has automatic $100 insurance on the priority mail. But on the first class, I took a hit on a bunch of those. But it's part of business. It's not going to help to get mad. Don't take it personal. It's just part of business and timing right now. So for the most part, I'm saying 97-98%. Everything's going through fine still.
Oh, good.
And I still use USPS all the time, except for my real big stuff.
What do you use for the big stuff?
Well, the good thing, now UPS and FedEx are competing with each other with all the eBay sellers. And they work together. And so between both of those, on FedEx and UPS, you could do it on eBay. And they're competing with each other. And the prices have gone down. And for big stuff, even big stuff that goes through the post office, you might want to look at FedEx or UPS because it could be cheaper than priority mail. So thank you, eBay, for that one.
Well, we try. Now, I know it's not about me, but when I think about customer service, I tend to divide customer service practices into two groups, reactive and proactive. So, for example, there are reactive practices a seller can use for situations like long carrier delays, like a buyer contacts you and says, hey, my parcel's not here yet. Those are kind of reactive to a buyer's query or complaint. And these are important, of course. But I've always stressed the importance of proactive practices. Do you think of it this way? And if so, what are some of the ways you think of proactive customer service practices?
Yeah, for me, proactive, I think you might be leaning towards, you know, if you know an item is going to be late, contact the customer. And perhaps I generally don't do that once it's out of my hands. Honestly, I don't have time. But if you know something's going to happen, yeah, go ahead and contact the customer. But to me, the real proactive customer service is to take and have exceptional images and very clearly pointing out any fault in the item that the item may have in the images and the description and the condition. And I very often will even put it in the title. I'll put with issue in the title so the people know there's an issue and make sure to read it. Because a lot of people on their phones and stuff, they go, oh, I didn't see that this was a problem. And they're not lying. They just bought it on their phone and they didn't read everything. We know that the customers, they don't read very much. We know that. eBay knows that and they've told us that. So that's why I'll put in parentheses with issue in the title and it makes them read it. It doesn't mean that they don't want it. We don't want to hide anything. That's bad customer service. You don't want to hide it and you don't want it to get there and they say, hey, what's this?
Surprise.
Then you don't want that to happen. You want it to be as smooth as possible. The whole experience. Often, if there's room, I'll definitely put it in the title with issue, when it has an issue.
I also like to think about worst case scenarios and how I'm going to handle them before they actually happen. That's what I mean for me about proactive. So what's the worst that can happen with this parcel? And am I ready to deal with that? And how am I going to deal with it? Not that I'm anticipating it would happen, but if something does happen, I've already thought through how I'm going to react. And hopefully I'll react calmly, professionally, like a good seller focusing on the customer.
Yeah, you know, this one, especially with new sellers, and you and I know this, that new sellers, they have a tendency to take everything personal. Oh my goodness. Way too often people get upset about it. They lose sleep. It's not worth any of that. If it's really fragile, go ahead and put insurance on it. If it's priority mail, it's got $100 insurance anyways, but pack it really well. And I don't worry about this stuff. You know, do whatever you can. Do the best you can on your end. That's all that you can do. You can't do any better than your best. I wouldn't worry about it. Just do your best.
Tim, you know, on the podcast, just like on the old eBay radio, we love tips. We especially love them when they're in order. So I'm going to ask you something I think we asked you a few years back. Tim, what are your top 3 to 5 tips for sellers when it comes to reconsidering and renewing and recommitting to their customer service for 2021?
Really, the big one, put yourself in the customer's shoes. What does the customer really want? The customer wants a good product at a fair price, and that's what eBay is about. especially if it's used, which most of our stuff is. Well, I'm an everything seller, so most of my stuff is used. So they want a good price. We'll give it to them. And you're going to have a happy customer. Pack your items really well. Make the experience good when they open up the box. Don't put it in a pizza box.
I had a friend who got something on eBay and it came in a box. It was a Pampers box.
Oh my gosh.
Reused. Now, it wasn't that it was unhygienic, but of course the message it sends is a little disconcerting. Yeah.
If you have to use another box, turn it inside out. Just cut the box open, turn it inside out. Then you have brown on the outside and it doesn't look so bad. And I do that often, but I don't use Pampers box.
I love the idea of reuse, but you know, there's just a point where you make yourself look bad.
Yeah, ship on time. Do what you say you're going to do. It's not about you. It's about the customer. If you take care of the customer, everything else is going to work out. You will get a raise if you want to have a raise. If you're not happy with what you're making now, find a way to serve the customer better and sell more items and you'll have your raise.
Well, Tim, I really appreciate you taking time to tell us about all these things.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
Tim Chapman sells on eBay under the user ID Mr. Customer Service. Look for a link to his eBay store in the transcript for episode 127. Our guest this week, he's a very interesting seller with a great story to tell. Join me in welcoming eBay seller Alec Larson. Hi, Alec.
Hey, Griff. Hey, everybody. Sort of nervous, but at the same time excited to finally get to share some seemingly cool eBay story with you guys.
It's okay to be a little nervous. I think that keeps us on our toes, but I think you're going to be fine.
I think so. And I am an introvert too, so I'll try to break out of my shell.
How did you get started selling on eBay, Alec?
Yeah, so at the time, this would be probably mid-2016, I was a musician at Disney. We were in a boy band and we would play four nights a week. It was great. The other good thing about that is I had the entire day to pursue entrepreneurial projects, and that was a huge benefit to have that extra time. And I knew, you know, at some point, the musician thing couldn't last forever. I was in my mid-20s. I'd always had the entrepreneurial bug. I was at the time living in a very, very cheap apartment. It was not nice at all, but very cheap. And my goal was to save capital. I wanted to save up for some sort of endeavor. I knew I had to do something. It was either going to be real estate or maybe some opportunity that would come up. So I was sort of savvy with WordPress, and I was building websites for local businesses to save money. That was my vehicle to sort of amass some sort of capital. My other background is in aviation. I'm a private pilot as well as an AMP, so I have some mechanical background. And one of the flight schools that I got my license at, the director of maintenance wanted a website for his parts business. And his name was Jack, and we met and we sort of hit it off. We became friends almost right away, and he was explaining to me that he needed a website for his eBay parts business. He was just explaining his model to me, and he essentially became sort of my mentor because he would share how his model worked. He was selling airplane parts on eBay, and he had over 1,000 listings at the time, and there was sort of a light bulb moment when he said that he had not just a few parts that he was selling, he had an assortment of inventory. There was a lot of aircraft parts that he was selling. I built him a website, and he kind of got me started in eBay, and I don't remember how I found the niche of auto parts or how I decided upon it.
I was going to ask you that. Why auto parts?
Yeah. So I should have probably started off saying I do OEM automotive parts, primarily Ford, GM, Nissan, parts that you would buy from the dealerships or from the manufacturer that come in the original OEM boxes. At the time, I think I had a tote full of old jet ski parts from one of my mechanic friends. And in there was a timing belt for a Honda, and it had the OEM Honda part number on it. And I thought that could be what I try, because I knew that with auto parts, the price point was kind of where I wanted it. Jack, my friend that got me started in this, he had a good point. Like, it takes the same amount of effort to sell a $10 part as it would like a $100 part. So I like the price point with auto parts where you're right around like $50 to $100 on average. And what I really liked was that there's a part number, and that part number is kind of like your center anchor. It's the most specific piece of data you can use. And I knew that I was going to be able to find data on Google very easily. I was going to be able to find fitment data. I was going to be able to find the competitive price points. And if you put that in eBay, having just the part number to go off of instead of like several UPC codes or different sizes, I really liked that product niche. So I had a good feeling about it. And Jack's method of finding airplane parts was using local auctions, auction websites where you can buy bulk loads of inventory. And I thought there has to be an automotive parts niche just like that. So I was kind of eager to get started. I found a local auction. The first batch of inventory I bought was a pallet of Ford parts, and it was really distressed inventory. They were in the new OEM boxes, unused, and I spent around $1,500 was my initial investment in that pallet of parts. When I got the parts, I rented a little U-Haul trailer, got all the parts home. I think there was about 170 parts initially, and it took me at least a week or two to get those fully listed on eBay. And it came out to be somewhere between $12,000 to $15,000 worth of parts. The objective was to recoup the initial investment as soon as I could, because my theory and based on Jack's model was that I've got $12,000 of inventory listed on eBay. If I sell and get my initial investment back within a month or 2 months, I can take that, reinvest it again. Now I have maybe, you know, 9,000 of inventory, but now I just bought another load. Now I've snowballed that. Now I have a larger inventory dollar amount, and that would equate to obviously a higher cash flow. And you can theoretically continue to build that, and it would compound. And that was my theory, and it worked. It worked really well. So at this cheap apartment I was living in, there was a little garage. I essentially used the garage as the storage space. That was my initial starting point. So there was the initial investment was, like I said, $1,500, and I didn't have any overhead with the garage. It was a good foundation to kind of validate the business model, see if I could recoup my initial investment, learn all the mistakes that I knew I was going to make with shipping, figure out the post office, learn eBay a little bit. That's what I did. And what's cool is I have pictures of all of this. When I first started, I took pictures of like the first load I bought, almost like a journal or a diary. I made my money back, I think, within 2 months. And I had money saved, so I knew that I was selling, I was moving inventory. My eBay selling limits were low to start off with.
Yeah, eBay kind of guide rails people into selling, so those limits can be pretty low when you first start off.
Right, and it made sense too, because if I had been turned loose on the size I am now, it could be a disaster for customers. So that was good, and I think what I did was I called eBay, and every month I would ask for a limit raise. And I forget the actual amount, but it worked out completely fine.
What other challenges were there when you started first off?
The main challenge was space. That was the main thing, which wasn't necessarily a challenge, but I knew if I was going to grow, I would have to find either a warehouse or a storage unit. But that didn't make sense at the time cost-wise, so I wanted to try to bootstrap a little bit. The other challenge was I saw other eBay sellers. They had compatibility charts on their listings. And I thought, okay, I got to figure out how to do that. That was another challenge. And then finding a way to have a more consistent way of getting supply of the parts. I knew that I couldn't rely on just one-off auctions. I was going to have to find a way to make that more consistent, especially if I was going to have overhead like a warehouse.
What was the solution for that?
Well, I knew that the initial load that I bought, I knew that those parts had come from a car dealership at some point, either a car dealership or a body shop. I know nothing about car dealerships or how the parts departments work, but there must be something that caused these parts to end up discarded. So I figured, okay, I've got to start maybe calling parts managers at dealerships. I've got to try body shops. And I think there's 20,000 total dealerships in America. So I said, if I can just tap into that, it should be a good way to validate the whole model.
And it worked.
And it did, yeah. I had to break out of my introverted shell to call. That's essentially how it got started, in a garage and auction websites, sort of. The cool thing about this was somebody can spend very little money on a large dollar amount of inventory, recoup their initial investment back fairly quickly, and continue to snowball without having a large investment or going into debt or anything like that.
So give us an idea of how big your business is now. How many listings do you have up at the moment?
At any given time, there's 4,400 to 5,000 listings at my warehouse, and it's 3,500 square feet. So I've got three rooms. I've got a shipping room. I've got a listing room. And at any given time, I've got two helpers. They're primarily doing listings, taking photos of parts.
Do you have an area set up in your business where you just take photos and someone does the listings?
Yes, yes. And that's just a really big table with a roll of white sheet over it. And I've got your basic photo lights. And what's really cool about the eBay app on the phone is I just have my employees log into the eBay app and they can take draft photos with the phone. So they're just taking photos with the phone. So it makes it very quick to upload the parts in draft mode, and then I can come on the computer and list them later.
You have a staff of two.
Yeah, two. And when COVID started, we obviously lost our Disney gig, but two of the other musicians in the band came to help me. So I had some trustworthy help. One of the guys still works with me today, and I've got a girl that helps me do the computer listings and things like that. It could be run as a single person operation at this level. It just would be a little bit overwhelming to get things listed. Having someone listing the parts for you really accelerates and takes a lot of the grunt work off the table.
How has the pandemic affected your business? Have you been impacted by, for example, the shipping delays that many sellers have experienced over the last few months?
What I had tried to do at the beginning was predict what would happen. It could have gone in so many different directions. My original worry was, how are my dealerships going to be handling all this? How is the shipping? Is the post office going to close down? Is the UPS going to close down? I was so scared. And none of that happened. What I would do is I would call the dealerships and check up on them. How are you guys doing? And the peculiar thing was, they were less busy in the service departments, but they were selling vehicles. They were breaking records for vehicles being sold. I wouldn't have expected that. The other wild card was that in that month of April and May, there was a shortage of inventory of vehicles. So you had people buying used cars, holding on to used cars. The value of used cars was ticking upwards. So you had smaller dealerships flipping used cars, reselling used cars. And that helped me because I'm selling trim panels, trinkets, emblems, and things that they needed. So at the same time, you have this sort of bad sign that people aren't going to be driving. But then on the other side, it made up for it and sort of equalized the demand for parts.
So there should have been a relief, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it was in the middle of March, and I just day by day, I kept watching the sales still come in, and I'm thinking, okay, we're still doing this. We're still listing inventory. I didn't notice a drop off in sales because I was adding listings.
What about shipping delays over the last few months? How was that?
Over the last few months, you saw the post office struggling a bit, but then at the same time, you had UPS enter the realm, I guess you could say. And the main problem was the tracking sometimes wouldn't pop up. I'm doing about close to 1,800, 2,000 units every quarter, and I might have had to open 4 lost claims.
I think all things considered, that's probably not a bad figure, yeah.
If it's a $9 gasket and it's lost, I would just apologize to the customer and say, I'm going to refund you for now. If it shows up, just let me know. But I didn't notice too bad of a delay, just going off of the messages that I got.
Did you have any customers who then got their package after you refunded them?
Yeah, I had one where I sent out 2 pairs of tow hooks to somebody. They had told me they got the other ones, and they're like, do you want me to send it back, or I could send it back? And I think I was going to lose like $40. So I just said, just don't go to the post office. It's not worth your time. I appreciate you calling. Yeah, just one like that.
What are your plans for the business for 2021 based on what you've experienced over the last year?
Since I started, I've always been in a growth mindset. I've always been in a growth phase. I haven't yet decided where I want to stop. You know, I started in that little garage. Then I moved into a 4-bedroom house that I was renting, and I turned the living room into a warehouse. So imagine, I have pictures of all this too. So I had a living room full of shelving of auto parts, dusty auto parts.
Were you living alone in that place at the time?
I had one roommate, and he was actually helping me with the business. So, we didn't have a TV. We didn't have a couch. We'd have guests over, and they would be...
They'd be shipping packages for you.
Yeah, they'd say, you have a stock room inside your house? I would have freight shipments come to the house, but it worked. I was able to further validate the model, further acquire inventory, and then finally justify going to a big storage unit. At some point, I knew I had to get to a bigger, more official warehouse and figure out how to get to the size of being able to handle that overhead.
What method do you employ for keeping track of your business? Do you use accounting software? Do you have an inventory tracking system so you know when you may have some parts that need to be restocked? How do you manage all this?
I'm really basic. I use Excel for the accountant and for keeping my ship in the right direction.
I do as well. I use that. A lot of other sellers will rely on different software. You said you had staff. How do you handle, for example, payroll?
Yeah, so they're not on a W-2. It started off as always someone coming to help. They're not even part-time. They would have a full-time job, and they would come in and do some listings.
Like on a contractual basis.
Exactly. So it'd be 1099. That's primarily the labor cost. It's pretty low. Each helper is putting in a couple hours, maybe sometimes 20 hours a week, just catching up on getting the drafts made.
But as part of your growth plan, if you want to get to a point in your business where it's self-sustaining and you even have a clone for you, you're going to have to look at, don't you think, having full-time or part-time employees that are actually official employees of the business?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then coming up with a salary that would incentivize them to stay just because you're investing that time training them. I'd really like to find someone that knows eBay as well or is familiar with it. But yeah, that would be essential. That has to happen.
Are you utilizing the eBay feature for multiple user account access?
I was initially when I would have people working remotely from home on there. But for using the eBay app, there's no way to do that. I would love to have some sort of the admin feature working on the app. That would be great.
You use Excel. How often do you make entries? Do you have a regular practice where you have to sit down and, like I do every week, I don't sell that much right at the moment, but I'm always adding in my purchases, for example, when I know they're going to be inventory. How do you use your accounting software to plan out for something like buying inventory?
Yeah, so I try to do it absolutely on a quarterly basis. And what was challenging at first is when you're in the growth phase, when you're starting off that first year, you really don't have enough data to sort of compute what your real selling cost is. Am I going to move this inventory that I just bought in a year? So I think it really took about 2 solid years to kind of get a rough idea of what my numbers were. The main expense is inventory, obviously. The other main expense is the selling cost. So I like to really keep those two in focus. And I know I have a number based on I have to buy this much inventory every month or every quarter to sustain this monthly cash flow. So I know that if I wanted to stop this growth level right now, I have a number in mind that every month I need to spend this much on inventory. But yeah, to your question, I try to watch that Excel spreadsheet and add to it quarterly and touch base on it. I'm watching my shipping costs because with my inventory, it's so random. I can be selling a bumper that has to go freight. And then I could be selling an emblem that goes first class. The shipping is just all over the place as far as cost. So you're always watching those. The other big thing I learned was that the larger the business grew, you initially wouldn't worry about saving 1% or 2% on certain things like shipping. But now with the numbers being the way they are, paying attention to small things like that is really worth it. Saving 2% a month on shipping or watching your return rate. So some of those things I try to tie into the accounting as well. I think those are critical. But yeah, so I use Excel to keep track of all the receipts and inventory I buy, the loads that I buy.
I think everyone who's using Excel actually creates their own custom form of accounting. Give us an example of how you're using Excel. For example, what do you enter for an item? Are there specific attributes that you have different columns? Be curious to hear this. I think as any seller, we'd love to know what another seller is doing.
I would assume and I would hope that there are probably much better methods than what I'm doing. It would be really easy if I had 50 SKUs of the same part. You know what you paid for each one. This is your supplier. This is the margin I'm always going to make. And you can plan ahead and kind of put that on its own autopilot. But for me, let's say that I spend $2,000 on a load of air filters for Caterpillar diesel engines or something. The only thing I know is that altogether there might be 170 units in that pallet and it might be worth $10,000 or something. I know that I can put the average sale price of each part is $59 or something or $60. I want to pay 20% of what I'm going to sell something for. I want that to be my cost, 20 to 30%. Each load that I buy, I can put a cost on each part and each inventory purchase I make, which is a bulk load, I set it as a separate store category in my eBay account. So that way I can see, okay, this is Tampa Bay auction lot, May 2020 or something. I can go into my listings, active listings, I could see, select that store category. I can see that the dollar amount of all that inventory. And on each individual listing, I could write in the description somewhere a little number that kind of tells me this is my cost in that part. I'm sure there's much easier ways to do this. You could do this in Excel, but it would be so time consuming that it would almost not be worth it.
Because it's double data entry. You don't want to repeat yourself.
And trusting eBay with all the data, I try to recoup my initial investment on everything I buy within 2 to 3 months. And I try to keep my total inventory dollar amount growing. That's like my guiding North Star. It's really hard to do because some of my inventory, it can take years to sell.
It's very long tail.
Yeah. So it sounds unorganized.
It doesn't sound that unorganized to me. You have some way of knowing so that you can always go back and check.
Exactly. And I think the main takeaway from that to sort of touch on is I really rely on the store category in the eBay listing dashboard. When I buy a certain load of inventory, I always set that inventory so it's organized. So I know that bundle, I have this much invested in it. I can see, okay, I've recouped that initial investment. Now I'm in the green with that. Or I can see if I bought the parts, if I pick them out individually in an order from, say, a dealership, I can see what I paid the dealership for that part and immediately know, okay, I made 20% profit on this one. I know that. So that's helpful. But I would say I really couldn't live without using eBay as sort of a frame for the bookkeeping, I guess you could say.
That was part one of my interview with eBay seller Alec Larson. We'll continue with part two next week when Alec reveals his particular sourcing methods in greater detail. I'll put a link to Alec's eBay store, Larson Enterprises, in the transcript for this episode, episode 127.
You got questions?
We got answers.
Our first question is from Mr. Dana Ebbett, and it's a shipping question, specifically about unwanted combined shipping. Dana writes, "Dear eBay Podcast, my name is Mr. Dana Ebbett. I only use the term Mr. because the last time I wrote in, I was mistaken for a female."
Oh, no.
No worries, though. Happens all the time.
Oh, dear.
Well, we apologize, Dana.
I'll do my research next time.
We should not have assumed gender on the basis of the name. We'll be more mindful in the future.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Dana goes on, "My eBay user ID is traditional_hunter. My question is, I recently sold 3 deer hunting tree stands, and each tree stand comes in a fairly heavy, large box and must be shipped individually. I should also state that the buyer had to pay for the shipping. The shipping calculator combined the weight and size of all 3 stands into one shipment and charged the buyer $30 for shipping. When I shipped the items, I had to create 3 separate shipments and was charged $16 for each. This caused me to have to pay $18 above and beyond what the buyer paid for shipping. Is there a way that I could have set up the shipping that would have prevented this problem? Thanks for your help. Love the show." Thanks for the question, Dana. This is part of the old combined shipping discounts tool that we spoke of in a recent episode. Fortunately, there is a quick fix, and it's one that every seller may want to check now before what happened to Dana happens to them.
So, Dana, the shipping calculator is using your own settings for combined shipping discounts and applying them to your listing. That's what happened. That's why the 3 purchases were combined into 1 purchase. Now, in order to prevent this in the future, you'll need to either edit an existing shipping business policy like the one for this deer stand listing, or you could create a new one to apply, well, to any relevant listings now and in the future where you don't want any of the multiple purchases to ever be combined into 1 shipment. It sounds like these deer stands are perfect for that. We'll tell you how to do it.
And it is easy to do this. Just go to Seller Hub, Listings, and click on the link for business policies in the left-hand navigation. Once in business policies, select shipping policy to edit, or you can instead create a new one. Fill out all the necessary information and make sure that the box for combined shipping discounts is unchecked.
Unchecked.
Give your new policy an easily identified name, for example, no combined shipping discounts, then save the new policy. And we'll include an image of this in the transcript as well. You can then apply this policy to any appropriate listing where you don't want to combine multiple purchases into 1 shipping box.
Exactly. And there's another option too. If you just want to make this quick and the listing is still up, you can edit the policy that's in place for the deer stand listing. That would be just going to the revise button on the top of that listing and clicking it. And then when you're in the revise page, scroll down to the shipping section, click edit for the shipping policy, and uncheck the box for combined shipping discounts.
There's another option, you know.
There is?
Yeah. The seller could check his settings for combined shipping discounts and make adjustments.
Ah, of course. I forgot about that option. It's recently been upgraded, by the way, that tool, the old combined shipping discount. So it looks different. So Dana, you should check the configuration for your current combined shipping discounts and adjust them as necessary. And you can find these at, well, it's a long link, and we'll put the link in the episode transcript. It's www.ebay.com/ship/P=RF. PRF. For preferences, I suppose. There are 2 configurations you can adjust in that tool. There is a flat shipping rule setup and a calculated shipping rule setup. There's also an option for promotional shipping rules as well. Now, keep in mind that these settings are global. They apply to any listing where you offer combined shipping discounts. So, for example, you can set the flat or calculated rules to add or subtract a specific amount to shipping for each additional purchased item. This might work for your deer stand. I don't know the weight and the size, but it could.
It could. So Dana, we encourage you to explore these settings, but in the meantime, the quick fix for your deer stand listing is to make sure that the combined shipping option for the shipping policy for that listing is unchecked.
Our next question is from eBay seller Wayne, who writes, "Been listening for a while and love the stories and great info I get. I have a question about multi-item listings. I often list items with a quantity of 10 to 20 in stock. As I sell through the listing, then shows the 7 sold and 13 available, and continues to count down and show that until it sells out. So my question is multiple. First, I feel that there is a value in customers seeing that I've sold X number and I have X number available. Does eBay account for that and rank it higher if that is the case rather than an individual item or a listing with many but none sold?" So that's his first question. Number two, "I try to keep track and go in and revise the item and increase the quantity as I sell through so the listing never runs out. But is that the right practice, or should I just let it sell out and then do a relist? If it is better to do the relist, is there a way to open back up the listing and update the quantity? If I do let the listing sell out to zero quantity available rather than just hitting the relist button, what is the best practice when you have multiples of the same item? Do you list them with a quantity available, or do you just list each one? Thanks, Wayne." Oy, a lot of questions there.
That was more than two, I think, Griff.
Yeah.
But glad to hear he enjoys the podcast. And I think I have the first part of his question. May I?
Yeah, be my guest.
So Wayne, every time an item sells in a multi-quantity listing, the sale gives the listing an incremental boost in best match. The factor is called sales over impressions. The more sales from a multi-quantity listing, the bigger the boost in ranking. As long as that listing exists, and it can exist in two states, more in a moment, the sales over impressions number for that listing is in play. The more sales, the more solid the boost in ranking. Ending a multi-quantity listing and relisting it will erase any previous sales over impressions data, so keeping that listing live is critical.
Very good, Brian. I didn't know you knew so much about this. Excellent.
I only know a few things.
So, Wayne, different sellers employ different quantity available strategies. Some sellers like to keep the visible quantity available amount low to help increase urgency to purchase among buyers. Now, other sellers are not concerned with the visible quantity available amounts. A seller has the option to select a display that states more than 10 available for quantity available number, or they can just show the quantity available. These are sellers who have a lot of quantity of one item to sell, and it's not a matter of urgency.
Right. Some sellers have items that go in and out of stock, for example, based on seasonality. Sellers of these items don't want to lose any previous sales over impressions data for a listing. There is an option a seller can employ called stockout. If the toggle for this option is set to yes, a fixed price listing that goes to zero quantity will not end, but will instead show a quantity of zero with an indication that says, "This item is out of stock." As long as this listing is in the out of stock status, it will not return in any searches. Once the seller adds a quantity to the out of stock listing, the listing will resume with its previous sales over impressions data in place.
Yeah. And one other caveat, if a seller toggles the out of stock option to yes, it will cover all fixed price listings, including those that had a quantity of one. Some sellers find this confusing since out of stock listings will show up in the active view of Seller Hub, leading those sellers to believe their zero quantity listings are still available for purchase. They are not. So for sellers who rarely offer a multi-quantity fixed price listing, it's probably best not to use the out-of-stock option. But if a seller has significant numbers of multi-quantity listings that by nature go in and out of stock, that seller should seriously consider using the out-of-stock option. Brian, how does Wayne find these settings?
He can find the pages for changing these settings by this navigation: My eBay Account, the account tab, I should say, and site preferences. The settings for quantity display and stockout are at the top of that page, and we'll put the links for the pages in the transcript for episode 127.
Thanks again to both our sellers for sending their questions to us. They were really good questions.
And if you have a vexing question, a vexing question about selling or listing or anything eBay related, why not call it in to us at 888-723-4630?
Yes, that vexing little number is 888 888- 888-723-4630. And if you're one of those shy persons who prefer not to call, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Two options, phone or email.
Great. And now it's time for your weekly podcast to-do list reminder.
First and always, check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news, and always check your email for eBay alerts or updates as well.
Number two, do you need help setting up your thermal printer? You know, the one you bought on my recommendation?
No, not that again.
If not, why not send us an email or call us and we'll walk you through it here on the show.
What is this? The eBay for Business Technical Support Podcast? And finally, always check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
Now, on our next episode, we'll have part two of our conversation with eBay seller Alec Larson. On part two, we'll talk about how he sources products for his eBay store.
We'd like to again thank our guests this week, Mr. Customer Service, Tim Chapman, and eBay seller, Alec Larson.
And thanks again, Brian. We'll see you again for episode 129 in 2 weeks.
Yes, 129 in 2 weeks. I guess I'm an oddball. I'm on the odd numbers.
I didn't think of that, yes.
I'll be here. And thanks to our regular listeners, without who there would be no podcast.
So true. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.